you know, looking inward, looking at things that you can systemize, that you can invest in, can free up additional time for yourself so that you can look at, you know, other bigger picture opportunities or have more time for your family or travel or whatever it is that you want to do.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. As always, I'm your host, Brennan Dunn, and I'm early in the once a year launch of Double Your Freelancing Clients, which is my big, my heavy, my high touch, my personal course on getting clients. So I'm taking a little break between all the support I've been doing and talking with people about either getting them set up in the course or answering questions or whatever else to record this or to really make production ready this episode of the podcast. So last week I mentioned I interviewed Naveen Dittakavi, and Naveen actually, he took Patrick McKenzie and I's recurring revenue for consultants seminar a few years back. And he's also gone through a lot of my stuff, Ramit Sethi's stuff, a lot of different material. But what I really like about him and what I wanted to talk with him about is how he's been able to, you know, obviously you need to consume in the sense of you need to learn and you need to educate yourself on what you should be doing and why you should be doing it and so on, which is, again, what I try to teach, what I try to talk about on the show and so on. But most importantly, you know, it's all for nothing if you don't actually do anything with it. If you don't actually turn from a consumption mode to a production mode. So that's what Naveen and I discussed. And I think you're really going to enjoy this episode because we had a really good conversation that two people at a bar at a conference might have about just how his business has evolved and how he's been able to really overcome the addiction of thinking that by reading something or by listening to something or hell, by paying for something, that you're making measurable improvements in your business, but only until you act on that, act on the information, that's when you're able to actually make yourself and your company, in our case, better off. So here's Naveen. All right, guys, I want to introduce you to Naveen Dittakavi. Sorry. Naveen, you live down in Atlanta, correct?
That's right.
Awesome. So we're both, I'm always passing through your town or city, I guess. Big Delta fanboy. So I'm always always passing through, even if it's just running from gate to gate. So first off, I just want to welcome you to the Business of Freelancing podcast. And it looks like we're going to be talking about recurring revenue today.
Yep.
So before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the of our talk, quick 30-second bio about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I'm Naveen Dittakavi, based out of Atlanta. In 2003, I started my software business out of my dorm room at Georgia Tech. And today, I teach software freelancers how to build recurring revenue.
Nice. Very cool. Did you graduate in 2003 or you...
No, I graduated in 2004. I studied computer science at Georgia Tech. Okay. So
you, I assume you were, you went to school there and decided to stay.
Yes. I grew up here, just north of Atlanta, in the suburbs there. And I just made Atlanta my home.
Very cool. Cool. So you have, I think, you know, looking through my notes, you've gone through Double Your Freelancing Rate. You took Patrick and I's Recurring Revenue Workshop. Mm-hmm. And you've done a lot with Ramit. I know you've worked directly with him, you know, mm-hmm. for, what do you say, since 2013?
Since the fall of 2012. Yep.
Oh, 2012. Yeah. So you've, you've obviously done a lot. Give me that timeline, you know, in terms of, because I think, you know, a lot of listeners, they, you know, we've talked a lot about recurring revenue. We've talked about productized consulting. We've talked a lot about all of this, but I'm always interested in kind of the unique stories of people, how they've gone from what I assume was more transactional consulting on your part, where you
service business. Projects. Yeah, exactly.
So what, give us a little glimpse into that story.
Sure. So if you go way back, in 2003-ish, my friends were getting internships with GE and co-ops and all this stuff through the traditional college process. I was approached to do freelance work, and I was like, all right, well, let me see what this is all about. So in that summer vacation, instead of working at GE or something or equivalent, I decided to start freelancing. And I started getting clients and I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty decent. I don't have to go and get a job with any one particular client or one particular employer. I can get clients instead. So I kind of got that taste a little early on in life. And since then, I just started to develop relationships and built out a client network. And, a lot of it was luck early on. Just because everyone was trying to get into to create a new app or do something like that. But then when the recession came about, I realized that my luck had run out and that everything that I'd done so far was not structured. I wasn't proactively creating a business. And around that time, I started looking for help and I found some courses that showed me how to proactively sell. And I was actually able to grow my business during the recession, which was pretty awesome. So I started to understand that by being proactive and taking deliberate action, I could actually do something with my business and make it a real sustainable business. So years go by, and then around late or early 2012 or so, I was getting tired of doing the same old thing day in, day out, and having to go out and hustle to get new clients. I had a team, so I had to feed this beast. I think that you've talked about in the past when you had your large consultancy that you also had to hustle and get new clients and to make payroll and so all kinds of troubles that we face when we're trying to grow a business. I was just getting tired of it and I wanted to find a way out. I knew that, we had some recurring revenue, and I knew that if I grew the recurring revenue to be high enough, then I wouldn't have to worry as much about finding new clients, and maybe I could one day do my own thing as
well. Yeah, because, I mean, you would have that guaranteed income coming in.
Yeah, that's the security of a salary is what, ultimately why people take jobs. And when you're independent, you're in charge of your own salary. Now, you can do great and have a large business going on, and if you're, in a good year, but then what happens in the years where it's dry? How are you going to pay your bills? And I wanted to find a way to solve that problem so that I wasn't dependent on any one client anymore, and I wasn't dependent on having to do very taxing, long-term, large projects in order to make the revenues that I wanted to make.
It's funny. I was talking to Nathan Berry, actually, the other day, and he was telling me about how he's built up ConvertKit, his SaaS, and it's at 10,000 something a month in monthly recurring revenue, which is awesome. And we were talking about employees, hiring and everything like that, and it was huge deja vu on my part. And he was talking about how he was okay with hiring because he had this, his app was making this much money a month guaranteed, and it was only getting bigger. So he could budget, right? He could budget how much he could pay his team. And that was always, back when I had this agency of mine, we had, so it sounds like a lot like your story. We had a few recurring revenue things and they were almost by accident. It was really clients who didn't have anywhere to go after we built their thing. And we're like, yeah, we'll sell you, 10 hours a month of ongoing development. Like that was it. Right. But it was minuscule. It was like single digit percentage of our revenue. And yeah, we got lucky for a while, but as we scaled, it became, there was that issue of, yeah, I've got this massive payroll and all of my work is one-off. And it's funny, like my business nowadays is very one-off to a degree too, still. I mean, most of my courses are transactional, right? And it was just funny having, when you were just talking about that kind of realization you had, it just made me think of that discussion I had with Nathan just the other day where we were basically, it's not much different when it comes to, you know, anything really, whether you're selling pizza down the road at your pizzeria. I mean, that's one off, right? Or consulting, which is usually one off. But I think, you know, it's always funny how that kind of realization hits us, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that realization, I was deeply motivated to get out of that rat race. You know, I just the pain of having to continuously hit the streets, like it, you kind of feel like you're just spinning, your hamster spinning the wheels. Now, don't get me wrong, like the revenues were great. And you know, the money is nice, sure. But at some point, like unless your true calling is client work, most of us, especially those of us who have a development background, really want to do something else. We want to have our own babies and raise them.
Right. So you, I mean, you know, in my notes that I'm looking at, it looks like you're kind of like me. You're addicted to content information. You know, you Reddit, Hacker News, all these different websites. And if there's one kind of impediment to my success, and actually, to be honest, a lot of the success of people that email me, students of mine, whatever else, is this like overconsumption, little production kind of dilemma where, you know, it's really easy to read articles, listen to podcasts like this, right? And like just kind of overwhelm yourself with information. What, I mean, am I correct in saying that was kind of, you kind of struggled with that also?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's so much out there, especially if you're going to Hacker News and the Reddit forums every day. There's so much interesting things out there too. And you know, when we're trying to hone our craft and learn more about our skill, staying abreast of the latest things can be helpful. But at the same time, they can hurt you as well. When I started to realize this was happening to me, I kind of took a step back and I remembered something that I learned in the 10th grade. But because I went to engineering school where we don't read for pleasure, I forgot about this this technique. And it's called active reading. So when I would then, like once I started recognizing that this was happening to me, I would read listen to a podcast or read a business book or a sales book. And I would start to ask myself while I was listening to it or while I was reading it, why do I care? And how can I use this in my business? Because so many of us listen to this stuff passively or read a book and moved from page to page trying to find our way to the end. I wanted to take an opposite approach. I wanted to take time and tear apart sentence to sentence in each point. So why was that person making that point? What is the question behind the question being presented? And how does this tie back into my business? By using this technique, I was able to learn some interesting things to move the consultancy up market and charge more. And you know, one example would be like reading your book, double your freelancing rate, and then coming up with multiple ideas on how to emulate the essence of the case studies that you presented in the book. Now, my business wasn't exactly like the businesses that you featured in your case studies, but I could understand the strategy at a high level and then find analogies that I could test in my business.
Could you give me a quick like actual example of how you might do that? Like, so fascinated by that because you know, I do a lot of reading. When I'm not working, when I'm not creating stuff, I consume a lot. But a lot of, you know, you're an engineering student. I'm a classic student, right? So I do a lot of volume. You know, the amount of volume that I read is tends to be highish. But I don't like, I've never taken notes while reading a book, or I do not mark up books. You know, they're kind of like sacred in that respect for me, at least, you know, so I'm fascinated by this because I'm starting to get to that point in my life where memory is not what it used to be. And I used to have this weird ability to kind of like I could, you know, if I wanted to remember a page that I would have read that had something really interesting, like a quote, let's say, I would just have a way of just remembering like kind of what was around it, like certain words or something, and then I would be able to quickly scan and find it. But I'm losing that ability. So I'm really interested in kind of this active reading idea because personally, I suck at it. And I you know, but it's interesting that you bring that up and that you, like, for instance, with double your freelancing rate, you know, you've gone ahead and you've really torn into it and read between the lines to extrapolate how you could apply it to your business. And, you know, I've tried to do things because when I first launched it, a lot of people who bought it, you know, they would consume it, but they wouldn't change anything. Nothing would result.
Right, right.
And so I was racking my head, and one of the things I came up with that actually works pretty well is I would just follow up with people every few days using an autoresponder where I just kind of walk through. It's kind of like a book club in a way, right? You just walk through chapter by chapter the whole thing and give people a worksheet where then they can, you know, it's just a form. It's a WooFoo form where they can fill out and, you know, it'll say like, you know, I covered XYZ in this chapter. How can you apply that to your business? And it's funny, like those who fill that out and take that time to do it end up succeeding, you know, in contrast to those who really don't. And I'd love to find a way, you know, because every book I buy doesn't have something like that, right? And most things that I consume don't have any sort of follow-up or kind of structured way of helping you apply it to your business. So I'm kind of left to fend for myself. So, I mean, can you give me an example of like how...
Sure.
How do you do that?
All right. I'm gonna talk about two different things here. You touched on something that is very core to me, which is that I love that you're following up with your students now. That's so fantastic because we've seen the same thing as well on our side. One of the things that, you know, when I started teaching students how to build recurring revenue or how to get their consultancy started, the same thing happened to me. I could release a course and then some people might not take any action at all. But what I do differently, and it sounds like you're doing something very similar, is that I don't actually let them move on into the course material until they have done the homework and send the reply over. Because for me, I'm not trying to like, you know, reach thousands and thousands of students at scale and try to make a lot of money. I'm trying to affect change and help people, you know, achieve these things that they signed up with me to achieve. So that's the way I do it. I'm a little different. Maybe it's a little bit smaller scale, but I can look myself in the mirror at the end of the day and say, like, this person is progressing through the course and they are doing the homework assignments and I'm guiding them as a mentor through the material. And I love that you guys are doing that too on your end. But specifically on the act of reading, and also what's quite funny was that you're talking about how you view your books as sacred and you're very gentle with them. Totally, totally opposite on my end. Often most of the books that I bought are either new or in like new condition. And what I do, and the reason I want them in that condition, because I don't want anybody else's notes in the margins. One thing that I do is when I read a page or paragraph, if I like what it has to say, what I do is I fold the bottom corner, the bottom right corner, bottom left corner of the page. And that marks to me that there's something valuable on this page. And then in the margins, I write out, you know, I circle, you know, what is that I thought was interesting. And then I write out how I think I can apply it. And that allows me to go through the books and not have to remember exactly, you know, what it was. I just go and look for my bottom dog ear bookmarks and I find the material. Now, when I went through your book, Double Your Freelancing Rate, I did something different. Now, your book was delivered to me as a PDF, if I recall correctly. And, you know, I don't remember what I spent on it. It was a reasonable amount, maybe 40, 50 bucks, I think, at that time.
That's back when it was actually a book. It's not a book any longer. Well, it's more of a course now, but they're still reading bits. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I did with your book at that time was that it may have cost that much, but then I spent just as much money printing it at Kinko's.
Oh, interesting.
And I printed out, had it bound over there, and then I went through it page by page and analyzed what you're getting at. And it was through that experience that I was able to take certain things away and move up market. And the same applied with another book that I read by Jay Abraham, which helped me also move off market. And one of the things that I took away from that book was, you know, when you walk into Target to go buy clothing and when you walk into Saks Fifth Avenue to buy clothing, totally different experiences. What are required to provide your clients with one experience over another? And in my business at that time, I wanted to move away from the $5,000 to $10,000 projects and move into the $50,000, $100,000 projects. So I viewed it as target versus sex. And I did a few things differently in my business to create an entirely different experience for my clients, to give them that level of comfort and that level of touch so that they would feel comfortable spending the much larger projects with us.
Okay. So first off, I would love to dive in another interview into that specifically, into that thread. But let me ask you this, because this is another question I have. And again, I'm fascinated by this whole kind of like metadata on top of what it is you read. It's fine. Like, let's say you just read a really good business book and it's full of really good information. But a year from now, I mean, how do you keep like a separate like ledger or a separate like, you know, internal wiki that you consult with that has kind of like pointers to all these different books? Like, how does that work?
Well, yes and no. You know, there are certain things that I rely on memory for, like, and there's certain things that I'm working specifically on. So, you know, when I wanted to create the upmarket experience, I was reading your book and Jay Abraham's book. But when I wanted to improve my sales skills, I reached out to Pam Slim, and she recommended the book called Proactive Selling. And then another person recommended Spin Selling. And I was working on those skills at that time. So what I like to do is kind of look at them as different departments and work on each department as a skill set. So this kind of ties back into consuming information. You know, as a developer by training and as a nerd as by birth, I love reading about what's going on from a technical standpoint. But you know, when I'm a Ruby on Rails developer, and when Rails 1 came out and then when Rails 2 came out, there were massive leaps and changes in terms of how more efficient you could become by learning what was involved in Rails 2.
I remember. I was there at that transition.
Yeah, and it was awesome. And then that transition from Rails 2 to Rails 3. Yep. Also, leaps and bounds of productivity to be gained as a developer, which means that your effective hourly rate is going up. And you can expect your team to produce more in less time, and your margins will go up. But at some point, you have to recognize on your technician side that your skills max out as far as being able to gain additional productivity from investing in them. So, like, I was unable to squeeze more by learning more technical information from my business. What I recognized was that my business would grow and yield more dividends to me if I invested in creating a better experience for my clients, going after higher value clients, learning how to sell better. And when I focused that time that I used to consume reading technical material to reading business-oriented material, I was able to achieve those new dividends.
So here's a question for you. So you walk into a place like Barnes & Noble, and they have a massive business section. Given that it seems like with your active reading technique, you know, a lot of time goes into consciously reading what you're reading, how do you filter it all? Like, time is limited. How do you decide, like, do you have any tips around that? I mean, especially when you look at stuff on the internet, I mean, that just makes it even worse.
Absolutely. So if you look at, like, you know, let me walk through the transition. 2003, you start a business, build a couple of SaaS products, build a service business around it. 2008, everything kind of comes to a halt. I invest in a course and learn how to proactively sell at a smaller level. 2011, 12, I want to move up market. I start looking for information that can help me do that, and I diligently consume that. And then, you know, I start to, which includes both value-oriented information and also sales-oriented information. And then, you know, at the end of 2013, I'm booking, you know, nearly six figures a month in business, and I actually overdo it. And I lose an entire year roughly in 2014 because I'm now delivering on all these huge projects that I've booked. in the prior year. And then I take a step back and I say, look, this is not really, you know, I built this recurring revenue in order to have free time. What's the point of having free time if you're just going to fill it up again with service work?
Right.
So I took a step back and I said, all right, what do I really want to do? You know, I've enjoyed, you know, coaching some people individually. I'd like to work with more students and help them. So what do I need to do in order to do that? And I looked for the resources that could help me propel myself forward. So, you know, I don't look at it as a, you know, here I am as a average person and I want to improve everything at once. I look at it as here I am. If I make improvements in this section of my life or in this section of my life, those at this point in my life will make pay the highest dividend. So I'm going to find resources to do that, whether that is, you know, now with respect to like getting the message out there, or before, which was more like, you know, learning how to sell better. I will look for information focused to the one area of my life where making improvements will yield return.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because it sounds like what you're saying is you, and it's funny, I do a little coaching now, and I'm always kind of focused on helping people, you know, figure out where you want to be X months from now, let's say, and then deconstruct that into the parts that make that up, right? So, you know, it sounds like what you're saying is you wanted to learn how to sell reliably, how to be more proactive in your sales and marketing, and be able to not leave things up to luck, right? So that's the goal. That's where you need to be in, let's say, a year from now. So then you deconstruct that into, well, what resources are available that can help me take a shortcut to getting there, basically, right? And then so instead of you just wandering over to Amazon or wandering into a bookstore and like, you know, ooh, let's find the most interesting title or something. You're very systematic, it sounds like, about when it comes to what you're going to consume.
And that's where I am today. Like, when you mentioned Barnes & Noble, and I think about that, I'm going back to my high school and early college days, and I'm thinking about wandering into that business section again and picking up, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or one of those books, and just kind of like reading it while there, sipping a coffee, and just kind of sucking in that information. And at that time of my life, it was more motivation or inspiration, but not, it doesn't have really any application. And that's probably because I didn't follow a system. By kind of identifying, you know, there's a system, a method to this madness, you can find the right resources and apply them. But going to a bookstore or something, going to a generalist, it's going to be hard for you to find the right resource unless you have someone there pointing you in the right direction as to read this first, then read this, and then read this. Kind of like the prerequisites system.
Like a curator, basically, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's funny. Like whenever I get into a new hobby, let's say, right, I always look for that. Who is the curator? Signposts, right, that have all the like 500 miles to this location, 200 miles to that, you know, you see them at like tiki bars and stuff, you know, it reminds me of that, right? Like that's, you know, I want to find that signpost first when I enter into anything new. And then I'm going to work down that kind of like that choose your own adventure story down to where I need to be. You know, you've developed this system for learning, it sounds like, which has been refined over the years, and it's helped you get to where you are now. Two questions kind of come from this. First off, how do you maintain learning versus doing today? Like, how do you schedule like Fridays for learning or something? Or is it more of just a thing you kind of mix throughout each and every day? And my second question is going to be focused more on overall lifestyle. So, you know, what kind of, now that you've built up both this business system, which is reliable and systematic, and this knowledge acquisition system, which is reliable and systematic, like how has that affected you personally?
Sure. Okay. The first question was around, you know, how do you make time to do this? And how do I actually do it? Now, I hope that my clients are not listening to this podcast, because I'm about to tell you something that I don't want them to hear.
If you're Naveen's client, you know, shut your ears right now.
please, go away. What I do is that I start my day off with the tasks that are most important to me. So, you know, I wake up around 7-ish, I'd say, on most days. And, you know, once I am ready, I work on something that's important to me, not my client. I recognize that my highest cognitive time, when I'm the most, have the highest ability to do strategic work, is first thing in the morning for me. So if I'm going to do something where I need the highest amount of cognition to make leaps and bounds changes in my life, I would rather it be focused on something that I'm controlling or a project that I'm doing for myself or my business, not my client's business. So once I've taken care of that high value work or strategic work or cognitive work for me, that's when I start my day where we help, you know, either students or clients. And that's where those investments have been made. You know, spending an hour or two in the morning on something that allows me to move in a strategic way, is what it took in order to get where I am today. And then that time from 9 to 5, 9 to 6, working on either your day job or working on your client work, that's, you know, you give them, you know, your best as well, but your super best is still reserved for yourself.
Well, I think, and you know, it's funny, like, I don't see that as a bad thing or something you should, you know, maybe keep your clients away from. You know, the reason why is, when I hire somebody, when I'm the client, I want that person to be fully knowledgeable about how to execute on the work that I'm giving them, right? Whereas I would look at the things that you do at 7 a.m. as being a little more risky, in the sense of you might back yourself into a corner and need to get out of it. Or, you know, I mean, there, it's new territory for you. Sure. It's exploratory, right? Yes. Whereas when I hire somebody, when I'm working for a client, I'd expect that they know that I've charted these waters before, that I'm comfortable doing this. I see that as a, you know, if you have your mental energy for exploration is reserved in the morning for you, then that I would proudly tout that to my clients and customers.
Okay.
Well, that's so, and I do, I, you know, to be honest, I do the same thing in a way. Like, mornings are my time to explore. That is when I look into weird arcane marketing stuff, or, you know, I just shoot, you know, just brain dump ideas or copy or whatever else. And then later on is when I do the quote unquote non-creative or non-exploratory stuff, like communicating with customers, or, you know, whatever else, right? Whatever's more repeatable, I guess.
Correct. Right. Yep. I can't remember the second part to your question. Do you remember?
Second part was kind of, you know, you built systems, you built reliability. What impacts that had on you personally?
It's been pretty great. There are certain things that, you know, are quantifiable, certain things that are not quantifiable. The systems that created, you know, where you don't have to go out and seek new business, allows you to work on the things that you love, and whatever it is that you want to work on. There are certain systems that I'm still working on today, deliberately, where I'm hiring specialists and contractors to automate some of the things that only I can do. And a couple of months ago, I hired someone for $1,200, and that investment allowed me to free up 2.5 hours a week, which is huge, actually. I mean, that's like multiple days in a calendar year, roughly. And, you know, those are the types of things that, you know, looking inward, looking at things that you can systemize, that you can invest in, can free up additional time for yourself, so that you can look at, you know, other bigger picture opportunities, or have more time for your family, or travel, or whatever it is that you want to do.
Right, right. So I'm still struggling myself in a lot of things when it comes to content consumption versus content production, and, you know, all these different kind of things, and kind of managing that kind of work-life balance and everything else. And I have a lot of systems that are working well for me, and I realize that, you know, I'm ahead of myself a year ago. I'm vastly ahead of myself 5 years ago, but I'm still not at that finish line yet. I don't think I'll ever hit that, right? I don't think any of us will ever hit that finish line, because it really, there isn't actually that line. But You know, I think if there's one big takeaway that I got out of our talk today, it is there needs to be a degree of careful curation. And it's funny, like one of the people that I'm most fascinated by is Thomas Jefferson. You know, he's a Virginian, I'm a Virginian. And he would do things that at first seem not borderline, but obsessive OCD. Like he had daily journals for just about everything, for a letter log of every letter he got, every letter he sent, what was discussed in that letter, like bullet points basically. And he kept a ledger of this. And then he kept a ledger of every seed he ever put in the ground. Did it bloom or did it actually yield anything? And, you know, I mean, he was meticulous about everything. And he was meticulous also about his consumption when it came to, he was a prolific reader. I mean, he would sometimes read 16, 17 hours a day, which to me just seems insane. You know, I'm always trying to be more Jeffersonian in that respect, right? Knowledge is power. Data is power. And, you know, I think there's a lot that we can all learn about how to, you know, buying a course doesn't do anything. What actually does something is acting on it, right? Changing something as a result of it, which means you can't just consume. You need to digest. You need to digest and process. It's getting a little disgusting, the analogy there. Anyway, but I think what's so important, which is something that you've been saying over and over again, is just this the systematic approach to both business, growth, you know, education and life itself. And I can't agree more. So yeah, I just want to thank you again for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
So Naveen, best place for people to find out more about what you do and what you're up to.
Sure. Again, my name is Naveen Dittakavi. That's NaveenDittakavi. And I'm reachable at howtobuildrecurringrevenue.com.
Awesome. So we'll link that all up in the show notes. Naveen, I just want to thank you again for coming on the Business of Freelancing.
Thanks again.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Naveen. Again, if you haven't rated the podcast, please head over to iTunes, type in my name, Brennan Dunn, type in The Business of Freelancing, leave me a review. If you would also maybe go old-fashioned, write me an email, Brennan@planscope.io. Tell me what you think of the podcast, any suggestions you have for people I could bring on, anything. You know, don't be a stranger. I love hearing from you. Honestly, the only metric I get is how many quote-unquote downloads I get of the podcast. I don't know how many of that is actually people listening or just people who have it subscribed and their podcast app is automatically downloading them. Anyway, yeah, drop me an email. Leave me a reply. Anything, or leave me a rating, rather. Anything helps. Next week, I've got Liston Witherell. Liston is actually going to be one of the mentors for the next, or the current, rather, W Freelancing Clients. He also was scheduled to speak at a W Freelancing Conference, but unfortunately he got sick literally right before the event. But he's going to come on and talk about getting into the minds and the heads of your clients. It's a really great episode, and I know you're going to love it. So stay tuned for that.